tell me what to do.
How are you doing, people of the regular chat? New intro. We are now in the world of X. Elon Musk has renamed Twitter X. We are officially in the attitude era of Twitter. The X videos is here to stay. XAEA12. And if you're not down with that, we got two words for you. I love this this reference to the old wrestling thing. It was fun when the D-Generation X music came in during a wrestling match. I remember when I was a child watching these things. It was there was some attitude in the air. Bird Flu says, "Didn't Truman tell off Oppenheimer? You didn't give the order. I did. Get this cretin out of here." Something like that. Yeah, we'll come back to it. I will analyze Oppenheimer. Not as good as Barbie, amazingly. Amazingly for me as a fan of Christopher Nolan, I consider him the greatest director in the history of cinema. But with Oppenheimer, it's not that it's bad. There's all sorts of good things, but for every good punch of Oppenheimer, there's something missing in this movie. There are opportunities that were not taken. And they're almost in the movie. This movie almost gets to what it should be. It's a very good, very well-made movie, you know, for an administrative thing. But it doesn't channel the greatness of an epic scientific movie. It is almost too technocratic, too politics, too much politics, too much details. And Richard Spencer has fully captured this in his Substack post about this. The problem is that there's too much. Christopher Nolan gives us a little bit of everything. But it's too packed. It's too long. There's too much detail. I mean, the whole thing after the Trinity test, the whole movie is completely useless. I'm sorry. I'm feeling like I want to sneeze, but I'm not sneezing. Hopefully I get to sneeze. So yeah, it's like a whole hour after the Trinity test, we get to see just administrative concerns and the American state going after Oppenheimer for collaboration with communists because he fucked a communist. It's all very small. It's like, I don't care. I don't care about any of this, but Oppenheimer cares. Christopher Nolan care. why didn't we focus? And especially, you know, in the fall of the show, why would that be the whole ending? Like a 1 hour expose of the whole network of betrayals behind Oppenheimer at the bureaucratic level. Who cares if this motherfucker doesn't have his security clearance anymore? It's like, oh my God, a Jew has lost a security clearance. There's 99 other Jews that will have their security clearance, but they were not the right Jew. Oppenheimer should have been the Jew who had the security clearance. It's extremely painful to see all this when you know that basically the ideological descendants of Oppenheimer have taken over the intelligence apparatus of the United States, have used it to their ethnic interest. There is much of the Jewish question coming in this movie. Anyways, I didn't want to start my review now. I wanted to go through the news, but it's like I can't wait to talk to you about what I found in Oppenheimer, but not as good as Barbie. Dan Simmons says, "I heard your Barbie review was good, JF. We'll be listening to it next." Yes, I'm having many messages that say, Jeff, that was your good show of the year, your best show, or your best review ever. People really liked my Barbie review. And I was very surprised, stunned by the profundity of this movie. For something that presents itself as a Barbie movie, it's very good. Go Away says, I knew Oppenheimer would be trash. Nolan can't write complex characters. He was always going to fail at a historical character study. That was my big fear, and it's a little bit what's happening.
A rebranding move from the world's richest person or a bird brain scheme that will damage a storied social...
CNN is back to sexy host.
...media brand Elon Musk carrying out his promise to replace Twitter's iconic bluebird with an X this Monday. It's all part of Musk's grand plan to transform Twitter. Christine Romans is in New York for us. She comes bearing gifts of answers for us. What is in a name? I don't mean to get nostalgic here, but we started with Twitter. We've grown to love what it stands for, and now we're replaced with, I think, a very strong letter, an X. Do we want it?
A very strong letter, an X. Do we want it? She experiences X as a microaggression. Isn't that amazing? Dustin Diamond had sent $1,776. Thank you so much, Dustin Diamond. He had said pre-tip. Thank you very much for supporting the show. Harmless was saying, I find Ernest Lawrence and to a lesser extent Edward Teller more respectable historical figures than J. Robert Oppenheimer. I don't know enough. I don't know enough. And he says also John von Neumann. Well, John von Neumann, certainly. I know enough about him to know that he was a true scientist, a true man of intellectual pursuit. The others, I don't know them enough. Carlota says, Jeff, imagine an exceptionally... this one, Carlota, I said I would not read. Your question is invalid and it has been deleted. Give me 10 seconds, I need to go sneeze. All right. Let's have a look at some of the news. Excellent analysis of Oppenheimer by Richard Spencer. Definitely a movie with lots of qualities, but perhaps too much packed in, with small bureaucratic concerns dominating the movie to a fault. We find ourselves with Barbie being an objectively better and more profound artistic production. I will be speaking with Richard Spencer tomorrow. Perhaps we'll have a chance to talk about Barbie and Oppenheimer. I don't know if he watched Barbie. I would recommend that he watches Barbie so we can do a comparative study on his show. CMT Country Music Television murders its own brand after pulling Jason Aldean video. The song was called Try That in a Small Town, which makes reference to the right to self-defense and firearms. CMT aired the video for a few days before removing it last Monday, sparking backlash over censorship. In the past 24 hours, I've been accused of releasing a pro-lynching song, a song that has been out since May, and was subject to the comparison that I was not too pleased with the nationwide BLM protest. These references are not only meritless, but dangerous. So, try that in a small town. We understand what it means. It means the kind of things you get away with, protected by George Soros prosecutors, you wouldn't get away with in a state that has castle doctrine and rights to self-defense. I agree with the point. Now, of course, the censors of this world will frame this as an appeal to violence. It's a very tame appeal to violence. Is appeal to self-defense an appeal to violence? That is something that was never truly answered. And that's why we found ourselves with Stefan Molyneux, for example, being treated as an extremist. It's like, well, if you argue for self-defense, are you really arguing for violence? Typically, we think of self-defense as outside of violence as it is initiated, you know, but it's a whole question of what do you label as violence. It's a semantic debate around is the initiator, is the response. It's not worth it. Our identities are getting interesting to the powerfuls of this world. Google's nightmare web integrity API wants a DRM gatekeeper for the web. It's just a proposal, but it's also being prototyped inside Chrome right now. So there's a whole trend this week on people who want to make identity of human beings a thing on the internet, like outside of the regular driver's license that you may have. They want a system that assesses this is a human user as opposed to a bot. And that's what OpenAI's Sam Altman is investing in. It's time Sam Altman launches Iris Skyning crypto plan to verify every human online. I'm not super interested. WorldCoin. So he made a cryptocurrency, but this cryptocurrency is so opposed to the general reason why cryptocurrencies are interesting, we might as well call it an anti-crypto. It's a cryptocurrency, the WorldCoin, that is tied to your world ID. And the world ID recognizes that you are a human user based on your iris. You will literally scan your eyes in a webcam. I don't know, they don't have a picture of it, but you will be biologically recognized by the world. And the goal being to be able to prove that you're human from a blockchain perspective. And Binance has announced that they would be listing this coin onto Binance. Personally, I'm not buying this coin, although, you know, it may have some popularity to it. Because I guess the goal of this will be, can I prove that I'm JF without giving anything away about me? And if that blockchain can accomplish this, then it will have some function. Because it would be nice if I can prove that I'm JF without anything else, without giving my driver's license, without giving away voluntarily anything. But the question is, does the blockchain having my iris, does this count as an invasion of my privacy? Because I will certainly have given that. Now, I don't know how the blockchain will be made, but perhaps it will be designed so that my iris is on the blockchain, but not in a way that is recoverable by anyone except myself. If that is the case, then perhaps it is a good privacy option that is birthing here. Dan Simon says, did you do it? No. I'm worried about these things. And I used to give away a lot. I gave away my DNA. I've thought about it, and this is an error. We should do like the Native Americans and deny researchers our DNA. Because you don't know down the line, down 200 years, I could have one of my descendants arrested because of me. I don't want this. I cannot judge in 200 years if a crime is moral or not moral, because there may be immoral laws, there may be unjust laws, there may be tricksters who use my DNA to set up one of my descendants. So, no, I've decided that I'm not giving away anymore anything optionally, you know, anything that I'm not forced to give away. The Aryan Queen of 4chan's, she has been used as a basis of comparison for the white race. against other races, random Midwest minimum wage cashier versus who Hollywood is trying to sell as new beauty symbols, fully dedicated makeup themes, fashion and surgery included. And amazingly, you know, the white female remains more beautiful, but now she feels uncomfortable. Look at how beautiful she is. But she's uncomfortable because now she is a symbol of racism. Well, you don't get to choose this. People have used your image and you don't have to consent to this.
Hi, guys. Oh, is the lighting weird? I'm doing my makeup, but I have to talk about something that I should have talked about a really long time ago. Because this morning I searched up my name, which I don't recommend at all. The internet can be a really mean place, but I found some memes that were damaging and hateful, comparing me to just other women, women of different backgrounds, different careers, different skin types. And I feel like it's so unnecessary.
It's nothing is necessary, lady. This is just freedom of judgment and freedom of speech.
Because I don't know why we can't just let girls be pretty.
Because there are girls who aren't pretty. So if you let them be, they will be ugly, not
without
pretty.
Thinking they're in a competition. A lot of these memes are straight up racist. And it really hurts my heart that my image is being used. I thought I could do my makeup and talk at the same time. It's not gonna happen. I just wanna make it super clear that I'm not okay with my picture being used to be racist or...
Well, okay, she's not okay, but people will continue using it. U.S. Air Force Academy superintendent cannot define gender ideology terms that they promote on campuses. Matt Gaetz was questioning him. Very good questioning session here.
Gender, bi-gender, two-spirit, demigender. What's demigender?
Sir, that's a term of the people that are eligible for that particular scholarship.
So here you have a scholarship about demigender. What is a demigender? It's people who can apply to the demigender scholarship. Well, can you give me a non-circular definition, sir?
It's available to it's a person who looks at their gender in a different way than I do, sir.
Well, sure, that's all of these people. You're a cisgender man. You don't even get to apply.
Well,
do you know what demigender really means?
I'm not really sure, sir.
Right. So, do you know what agender means? All one word, not a space gender, but agender.
Sir, I don't.
This guy doesn't know what are the criteria to get his grant.
So here we are pushing a fellowship.
By the way, if you know just a little bit of etymology, you will know that something preceded by A mean an absence of. So an absence of gender, that is what an agender means. Even if I've never read the definition, I can tell you.
Calling for people that you don't even know what the words mean, and the number one group of people, the cisgender men, are excluded. Now, in the name of diversity, equity, and inclusion, should we be pushing programs that we can't define that exclude the largest group of service members?
Well, sir, first, that program is not an Air Force Academy program. It's a program open to our entire country.
Right, so but you guys advocate for it within the academy.
We allow our cadets to apply for it.
All right, so basically our army is being taken over, and that connects somehow to the Oppenheimer question. our army is being invaded by ideological contributors who are changing it in the same way that in the movie Oppenheimer, the Jews are slowly changing the interest of America, and eventually there's a fight back, a pushback. But the communist interest eventually tie the US, Russia against their enemies, but in a way where Russia is also interpreted as an enemy. So we have a problem of the individualization of interest in the American governmental apparatus. And this declination of demigender, agender, everyone has their specialized interest, it bears nothing good for the future. And that was one of the problems in the movie Oppenheimer that Christopher Nolan was successful at illustrating. You can't have a whole apparatus with Christian Orthodox from Russia being generals and Jews from Poland being scientists and having the secrets and their Jewish friends, communist revolutionaries, and it mixes everything and you end up having no security. There is no way to guarantee the safety of military secrets in this kind of network of conflicting interest. Before we get to Oppenheimer, I wanted to address two questions that came from the crowd. The first was about marijuana. Someone wrote to me, "Hello, JF. I want to ask you, please, if possible, of course, to give a comment on the use of marijuana. I am 33 years old and I am clean of heavy drugs for 4 years and I am quitting marijuana now. I feel lonely and your streams help me. If you could comment on the use of marijuana in one of your future streams, I would really appreciate." So I've laid out my views on this before. If you are, I don't think that marijuana is super dangerous if you are a wealthy person who doesn't work, who doesn't have to achieve anything, you have everything set in your life, you've already made your money, and you want to enjoy marijuana and you enjoy it, not a big problem. But marijuana, if you are on demand, if you are in a relationship, marijuana will cut you from your relationship. If you need to work to be productive, marijuana will cut you from your productive capacities. If you need to be creative, marijuana will give you delusions of creativity and you won't really be engaged in the true creative process, which is not just to have ideas on a couch, but to be doing things, to be progressing in your projects. So in general, what I find is that marijuana makes people unproductive, lazy, not really creative in an efficient way. Although people will claim that it gives them ideas, the problem is those ideas have been obtained on psychosis, and they're not good ideas most of the time. It's very, very rare that I will see a regular marijuana consumer to have come up with something very intelligent and have enacted this project in reality. So in general, I totally recommend against marijuana. It will make you delusional. For those who have already borderline mental problems, it will exacerbate them. People who are a little bit psychotic, they go on marijuana, they become completely delusional. They become more aggressive, more dismissive, more absent. It is not good parenting if you are on marijuana. You don't have your normal senses to receive and respond to the needs and demands of children. So in pretty much all situations where you have something to do, I recommend against marijuana. The only situation, and this situation basically doesn't exist for most people, the only situation where marijuana is not hurtful is a situation where you have absolutely nothing to do, and you have nothing to do maybe for the rest of your life. Because the problem is, if you have nothing to do for this day, well, you're going to get marijuana, but then eventually you're going to want to make it a regular thing. You're going to come back to it in a time where you're not really available, in a time where you are expected to be in a certain social setting by your wife, your husband, your children, your employer. And you'll be performing much less in all of these domains under paranoia. Go Away says, I wasn't going to watch JF this morning, but then I smoked a joint and had the idea that watching JF would be a good idea. JF debunked. Well, that is a theoretical debunked, because Go Away, we know you are here every night. I don't expect that a marijuana joint has changed your attitude with this show. By the way, if you'd like to support the show, use the dollar button under the Odyssey chat. Odyssey super chats are my favorite way to receive support for the show. Alternatively, you can also use Entropy. The link to Entropy is in the description below. And if you'd like to send crypto, use Cointree or any of the addresses below. Then we have another question that comes about divorce. It's a longer question, but I think some people might benefit from this kind of counseling, so I'm going to read it in full. Before I describe the situation of the guy, keep in mind that the art of divorce is the art of having nothing, of having your assets already transferred to whoever matters in your life. Could be your next girlfriend, or could be your children, especially if your children are adults and they are on your side rather than on your ex's side. Doing an inheritance quick, making sure that you have nothing in your pocket, is how you win at divorce. Now, the one thing that is super hard to liquidate outside of the courts, if you are married and have bought it during the marriage, it's a house. So a house is, it's almost not doable to be transferring that house to your children or selling that house and giving the cash to your children. The problem is that a house is always traceable, and the judge will eventually come to compute it. Anyways, at the sales moment, the accountants and lawyers of the other party will ask if you are married. So a house is almost never subject to dissolution of the kind that I recommend. But anything you can get in terms of assets, if it's on the crypto side, it's going to be very easy to slide it out. Another aspect of the art of divorce is the ideal is when your wife doesn't know how much money you have. And crypto gives you this power. Because it's amazing. I mean, the $1,000 that you have in your 401k, your wife will know about. She will have the paper about it. And she will go for it. She will fight harshly for it. But you can have $1 million in Bitcoin that she doesn't know about. She's never going to bring it up. You're going to see her fight for the little piece of crap that you gave her. So the way to protect against divorce is actually comes back to the beginning of the marriage. It comes back to having never revealed to your wife what you have. So it's like, I can counsel you. I will counsel this guy. But on an already accomplished divorce, it's very hard to give good counseling. It's 20 years earlier that you should have taken the means to protect your wealth. Now, it's a little too late for most things, but the guy is not in a dramatic situation. He's actually in a very good position, so it's not going to be much of a concern for him. But just to say, if you are young and starting out in marriage, just make sure that most of your assets that you would go away with from the marriage Just make sure that you have slowly acquired Bitcoin and wallets that are unknown. And never reveal it. Your wife wants a block of cheese? Ah, you want a block of cheese, wife? Here's a slice of cheese. Now, you consume this slice of cheese, and you come back to me whenever you need more cheese. That should be your economic relationship with a woman in 2023. You want some cheese? I'm going to give you just a slice of cheese. Here's a slice of cheese. Oh, you've not been kind to me. You've been yelling at me this week. No slice of cheese this week. How much cheese do I have? You don't know. I don't know. I don't know how much cheese I have. But here's another slice of cheese. You've been good this week. Shringmamel sends a super chat. He says, what are your thoughts about alcohol? I drink at the bar when I look for bar hoes. I found my girlfriend by drinking with her. Also find it so much easier to talk to women when I drink. It's not dramatic. In the hunting part of dating, it's not going to disable you. Of course, don't become drunk. If we're talking about one or two drinks per night, you're not within the space where it will disrupt your ability. And if it helps you, it's fine. But I would avoid alcohol being a regular thing of your life when partnered, because it becomes very dark. The female cognition becomes extremely dark and hateful under alcohol. And if it becomes a couple thing where you and her are drinking, it's going to exacerbate our already existing, for sure, bipolar disorders. And she's going to become at times violent and depressive under alcohol. Doesn't take much alcohol for a woman to fully reveal her borderline and bipolar disorders and even schizophrenic disorders at times. So in general, I would maybe start a relationship. It's okay. But I would work toward no alcohol at all in the relationship. All right, so let's read the situation of the guy. So it's a couple. The woman has decided to leave. The husband had an argument with the wife, who goes out and parties with friends. After the fight, the wife moved out and says she wants a divorce. She is also claiming PTSD from the fight. The husband has tried to reconcile, but she refuses to come home. Then he found out through the bank she was spending thousands of dollars from their shared account. So he withdrew half of the funds from the account to protect what was remaining. She continues to claim she wants a divorce, but so far she's done nothing other than try to spend money. She bought an apartment, clothes, electronics, going out to restaurants, etc. It has been about 6 months. What was your experience, if similar to this event? How do you protect yourself within a marriage before becoming a seasoned divorcee? The threshold for abandonment, willful desertion in our state is 1 year. So the husband has another 6 months before he can claim for an at-fault divorce, since she has not paid any of the bills. I'm wondering what the husband can do if she all of a sudden starts paying bills, trying to come to the house, or otherwise tries to keep him on the hook. His daughter is over 18 years old, and we thought he might be able to spend the next 6 months giving her the most of his assets, since he always entered debt to bequeath her his savings and pension. That way, the assets would be in the daughter's name, and we could try to argue it's outside of the shared community marital property. We are most worried if she were to decide to go after the daughter and her children. Thank you for your time. I'm happy to send a donation next time on Odyssey. Well, thank you very much for the question. So, this situation is not dramatic. When the children have already begun their adulthood, and in this case, his child is already a mother, that is very good. Because there's going to be minimal impact in the sense that, okay, your daughter now has lost a mother as a model of loyalty in the couple, but that's all. All of her emotional pillars will be stable. She might be a good mother herself. In fact, being an adult and judging her own mother, she may be able to see just how ridiculous that decision was, and she may do better in her own life. So I would say you are not in a dramatic situation at all. Your first instincts are the right ones. In fact, they should have been done before. You should have ensured that there was no communal property. Communal property is over in 2023. You do not work to get a better communal property. You do not improve. You do not contribute to communal property in 2023 for the simple reason that it's going to be half yours and it's going to be subject of a war of attrition in any divorce at this point, and it's going to be destroyed by the stupidity of your wife. So anything you work for in the communal property, consider it zero. What you should have done a long time ago is not accumulate those paper assets, because those paper assets are super easily known by your wife and they will be called into the divorce. Now, seeing her current behavior, she left the home. You are wondering what happens if she comes back. Here's what happens. When she comes back, it will be to set you up. When she comes back, it will be with microphones in her jeans. So whenever she comes back, what you have to do is stay in the home. You have the physical possession of the home and you must defend it at all cost. What does that mean? It means she's going to try to come back and argue with you that perhaps you should leave. Perhaps you don't love her anymore. Perhaps you've grown apart from each other. And she's going to be trying to kick you out of the home or to have you voluntarily leave the home. At all point, you do not do this. You stay in the home. As long as she's the one who has abandoned it, it's yours. It's yours to use. You continue using the communal property because it might be taken from you at any point if she starts coordinating with a lawyer and starts making all of her false allegations, which the lawyer will coach her to do. So what you want in that segment of the divorce is stay in the home. If she comes back, you show yourself to be a respectful, loving person who does not get in any fight. Any fight. She can be yelling at you. She can be throwing stuff at you. You are stoic because any response will be clipped by her. All right? So she's going to try to pull all of your emotions. But you are a robot. You are like, oh, well, I would wish that we come back together. I very much love you. You're not disparate. You just state it neutrally. You're not emotional about it. You don't engage in backs and forth where she tries, because she's going to seed false accusations on the record when she has her microphone. And she's going to try to have you in a sentence where it looks like you're acknowledging what she just said. So the only behavior, the only back and forth you have with her is when she accuses you of these false things, you remind yourself in your head, she has a microphone. And you answer, that is not true. You remember when we had a fight? Remember when you tried? That is not true. You're not emotional about it. Just state it for the record. That is not true. That is not true. And then you don't go back and say, see, you're a liar. No. You just say, that is not true. Remember, you're speaking into a microphone that's meant for the judge and for lawyers. You're not speaking to her. It's done with her. She's abandoned you. So you stand in the house and your only reactions are, I would very much like us to stay together. I am heartbroken that you are leaving me like this. And yeah, I still love you. Why don't we stay together? And it's not true. You have zero emotion. You are not tempered. You are not easy to pull. She cannot take you into a fight in any way. If she starts hitting you, you do the minimal intervention necessary to just be safe. You don't call the police unless she tries to kill you. You don't call the police. You neutralize the hits. You don't fight back. You neutralize the hit. You can explain by voice what you are doing. So you can say, right now you are hitting me, and so I'm going to have to defend myself by raising my arms. You just state it as autistically like this. And at times she may be so aggressive that you have to physically take her and displace her, but you do it in a gentle manner and you explain on the record what you're doing. Well, right now you have hit me 3 times already. I'm going to have to displace you toward a safe place of the house, because at this point I am hurt. Now, it becomes a war of attrition, and the only thing that she can do to win this war of attrition is to herself cause the divorce, cause the 1 year long. So don't see this 6 month period or this one year period that you're talking about. Don't see it as playing to your disadvantage. You don't want to request a divorce. You want to let time pass, because time is pressure on her. It's not on you. If you ventured your share well and remove any finances in the common account, take control of everything, make sure that she's starving, make sure that she doesn't have money to pay her rent. So you make life hard for her and easy for you, and you win the slow war of attrition. Now she doesn't even have money to pay herself a lawyer. So there's no one coaching her on how to make false allegations against you. Life becomes hard and hard and hard for her. Perhaps she comes back, perhaps she doesn't. But that doesn't matter. You control everything. You drip nothing. And anything that you can push on the side, any of your new salaries, you redirect to your daughter. And you accumulate nothing. Nothing but what you need to function. The rest goes into crypto and your daughter. Crypto and your daughter. So she's going to be stuck potentially just tolerating the fact that you're never going to request a divorce, and she's never going to have the money to do it or the will, because she's too much on her party life. This is getting her too busy, and she's not going to even want to get with the trouble of filing court documents and that kind of stuff. Now, if you are a man who has regular employment with paper checks, and it's harder to hide your income in those cases. So in those cases, the problem is the question I would ask, you have to ask yourself is, do you need to accumulate further assets in your life? Do you want a dream house? Do you want any of this? Do you want to accumulate a pension on paper? Do you want to accumulate stocks on paper? If the answer to this question is no, I don't care, I'm ready to die, I want to give everything to my daughter, then just give it as it comes to you. And be a man who's worth zero on paper. Now, for the house, that's not going to be possible. The house, you're going to have to struggle for it physically. It's going to be yours as long as your ex doesn't have the will to really come back and face you. As long as that's the case, the house is yours. And if she doesn't have the will to come back and face you and set you up with false allegation or initiate the divorce herself with her current allegations, it's going to be yours as long as she can't do any of these three things. The art of divorce is to force her to do one of these three things. It's going to come at enormous cost for her. And by the time she gets through it, that by the time she has ruined your life, ruined the house, all of your wealth will have been transferred, all of your assets will have been transferred, and you're already going to have set yourself up for your new life plan. So you'll be ready to see the house fall. But that's what's going to happen. So what's going to happen is, at the end, if she has the will to do any of these things, the house will be sold and you're going to get half of it. But you're probably not going to get half of the money, because by then your wife will have accumulated credit cards that the judge will pay with the money of the house. So that's a big problem. Your house is, she holds it into her stupidity. So if she's so stupid, well, the thing is, it's not stupid for her to do so, but it's stupid from a societal perspective that we let women, if she accumulates credit cards or debts, she can basically debt herself into, she can take debt onto your house. But let her do it. There's no mechanism to defend yourself against it. If you had put this in crypto, if you had put this in other channels, it would be protectable, but a house will not be protected. So what you do is you let the potentiality of her do it. You hope that somehow she has a little shyness, that she's not as stupid as to do this, and that somehow she's a little ashamed, and that she's not going to do this. But if she does, that will mean your house has disappeared. It flew away in credit fees, credit cards, and party fees for your ex. So be it. It's okay. Accept it. You still have your plan well laid out. You have your relationship with your daughter. You're going to be able to bounce back. Your only responsibility as a man in the process of divorce against his will is to make that divorce harder for your wife than it is for you. And that's what you should aim for. John Drake says, I don't think JF is giving legal advice here, just his thoughts. Exactly. That's the way those are the coaching sentences I hear in my mind when I go through that process. I've become a pro at it. I mean, at this point, it's clean, clean, clean. It took me a couple of divorces to figure out all of the art. But at this point, it's like it doesn't even pinch my heart anymore. Roger James says, some Christian versions teach you to fight on for life because it is precious. My wife is a devout Christian. She has lost both legs, had 3 strokes, massive near fatal car crash, but she does not give up nor despair. Well, thanks for your testimony on this story. I agree. Do not despair, and you can always bounce back. All right, so my view on Oppenheimer, the movie by Christopher Nolan. I should be a fan of this movie because I am an extreme fan of Christopher Nolan. I consider him one of the greatest men in cinema. He often uses the same actors as this guy. We see the return of the Ukrainian, of Tenet. We see a lot of familiar faces from the movies of Christopher Nolan. And he realizes here a movie that is totally outside of his usual style. No science fiction, no embedded system, although he did take some of his ideas of embedded, reverted narratives. He put them as much as he can, but in a very historical, biographic movie. I was extremely worried seeing Christopher Nolan tempted by the historical, biographic type of movie, because it's a harder movie to make interesting. Because when you want to stick too much to the reality is always a little bit more disappointing than a script that you could have come up with. It's very rare that reality and all of its details and all of the required things that need to be laid out on the screen for this to be a historical movie. All of this combined makes the making of these movies much harder than a perfection movie, because the perfection movie, you can make the script super clean. It seems here that the job of doing a history movie for Christopher Nolan really hit him hard, and that it made him incapable of expressing his usual genius. He found a way to make a historical movie with an inverted storytelling narrative. The inversion comes as follows, and spoiler alert for those who haven't seen the movie, it reveals the end of it. So the way he arranged it is that the movie builds up a conflict between scientists, between Oppenheimer and some other scientists, on the basis of a secret conversation that would have happened between Oppenheimer and Einstein. And as the other scientist comes close, Einstein is seen walking away with a great despair and disappointment in his eyes, you know. And this, there's a misunderstanding about, and a whole question throughout the movie about what is it that Oppenheimer said to Einstein that led him to be so dark, so black-pilled as he exited this conversation. And the whole misunderstanding is built as follows. The scientist coming into this conversation thinks that they were talking in his back. And as he sees Einstein, you know, disappointed and very sad, he assumes, oh my God, he must hate me. They must have been talking in my back. And this leads him to eventually persecute bureaucratically Oppenheimer. But what we learn at the very end, what gives us this kind of key to understand the movie, is that no, Oppenheimer wasn't talking into this guy's back. Who cares about this guy? That's why this movie is stunningly like flat and uninteresting. Who cares? This is not big. Like, as someone talked, we're talking about there's hundreds of thousands of people who have died in Japan, blown away by just a random bomb that they didn't know was coming. They were going about their daily life, and just suddenly a nuclear fire comes from the sky and just kills hundreds of thousands of people. And you're making the whole key of your movie. Did they talk in my back? I think they did talk in my back. I'm going to take my revenge. I'm going to remove the security clearance from Oppenheimer. And this is the movie. It's stunning, the kind of disconnection that Christopher Nolan had about what was the true major aspect of this movie to be had, which was a human and scientific aspect. And how he veered into this whole bureaucratic betrayal of, oh my God, will people ever know? Will people ever know that Oppenheimer was betrayed, that he didn't get quite justice in the hearing about whether he was a communist or whether he had fucked a Russian communist or not? No one gives a shit. What the fuck is this, Christopher Nolan? Anyway, so the whole end of the movie is, oh my God, we get to learn he wasn't speaking in other scientists' back. What he told Einstein is, you know, the math I passed you the other day that was showing a chain reaction? You know that that math that was showing the possibility of a chain reaction that destroys the whole world? Well, I think we might just have started that chain reaction. And the whole idea is, yes, a nuclear chain reaction will abolish existence. But it's not going to be the atoms bumping on each other. It's going to be the humans throwing nuclear weapons at each other until everything is destroyed. It's kind of interesting, but in the background of oh, this whole conversation was misunderstood by another scientist, misinterpreted and paranoid about, it kind of sucks. That the whole inversion storytelling of Christopher Nolan has been used for a thing that mixes such small and big things. Now, yeah, I am become deaf, destroyer of worlds. That was Oppenheimer just translating some kind of other language to his mistress. And she was like, please read these words. What do they say? I am become deaf, destroyer of worlds. It's good in a trailer, but the movie leaves me very flat at that moment. It's like, there's not much of a build-up that leads to these sentences. And you end up thinking, well, that was just a sentence inserted in the script for the trailer. And there's so many of those in modern cinema where the sentence didn't really fit there in the movie, but it fit in the trailer very well. And the fact is, you have to understand that current cinema direction in 2023 is you think of the trailer before you think of the movie. You have to have a good trailer. And Richard Spencer points this out in his analysis. Actually, the whole Oppenheimer movie feels like a catalog of trailers. And yes, you know, because you feel the Christopher Nolan injection of fascinating epic music and epic moments. But it feels like a trailer, but for something that never comes. it's like, here's 3 hours of trailers, one after the other, each of them publicizing a movie that doesn't exist. You feel that the movie never quite comes. And that is a brilliant statement by Richard Spencer. That is exactly how I feel. And he found better words than I could have found in front of this movie. So Christopher Nolan, despite the failings of this movie, he did succeed at certain things that deserve to be highlighted. So the explosion, you know, I don't think it was very successful. I'm not feeling it like a big thing. It's a small explosion. Doesn't have this kind of epic feeling I expected. You know how they said, oh, Christopher Nolan had to blow an actual nuclear bomb to feel the real effect. It barely feels like anything. It barely feels like a big explosion at all. So it seems that he's blown a tactical nuclear weapon here, like a little grenade or something. I don't feel the size of it. It didn't strike me. Like, I expected to be like, oh my God, that is so big. But it's very hard to give scale in low lightning environment of a massive explosion. Like, there could have been cinematic tricks to give us an idea of the scale of what's happening. But instead, we just see a ball of fire in nothingness. And it's like, okay, well, is that big like one football field, or is that big like 50 football fields? Very hard to tell from the explosion. Christopher Nolan succeeds at inserting the important scientific questions at play. The rise of quantum physics, the European domination of quantum physics, the questions of quantum physics around its relationship with relativity, thinking around black holes, thinking around atoms. Christopher Nolan also succeeds at showing the kind of schizophrenic mind of a scientist, as Oppenheimer in this movie has visions, and the visions are very quantum physics based. And I feel that they are very good insertions in the movie. It's like sometimes Oppenheimer just leaves the conversation and you see little sparks. You see the kind of little sparks that he imagines as the foundation of the physical universe that is very well made. You see him imagining black holes and that kind of stuff, and that is also very well made. It's very long to develop the whole 1 hour. The first 1 hour is a very scientific hour, and then it gets into a more military hour, and then the third act is a bureaucratic hour. And the blowing up of the bomb happens between the second and third act. But it's painful to have 3 hours, and the whole ending of your movie is the least interesting part, the bureaucratic aspect. Because you have the scientist and human aspect, then you have the military aspect, and the achievement of the blowing up of the bomb, and then just bureaucratic betrayal team. It's a very painful arrangement. I don't think also that one other thing that Christopher Nolan succeeds at doing is that framing relatively well that this is ultimately very tied to the Jewish question. That those progresses and academia as a whole is basically undetachable from the question of Jewish culture. And that ultimately it was a bunch of Jewish Germans who made physics progress, a bunch of Jewish European physicists who were hiring each other in physics department of Europe, and a bunch of Jewish American citizens who were bringing quantum physics to America. And it was a bunch of Jewish networks of intelligence people and scientists / bureaucrats who were supervising those Jewish bomb makers and who were leaking their secrets to Jewish Russian spies. And you look at this whole movie and it's like, why isn't this more highlighted? You could have had basically the first mainstream movie about the Jewish question. And Christopher Nolan gets very close to it. Ultimately, to show that the whole partnership that existed between the US and Russia against Nazi Germany was a whole making of the Jews. You get this from the movie, which is already interesting. But unfortunately, Christopher Nolan, and he almost gets to the point of showing the tension between the Jewish interest and the Christian nations in which they live. Because at some point, you have Pash, a military leader, and he kind of plays the role of, you know, the Nazi interrogator in Inglourious Bastard. The investigator who can squeeze the Jews into exposing their lies and squeeze the French people who are hiding Jews below the planks. We have an equivalent character in this movie, which is Lieutenant Colonel Pash, who happens to be in the American Army, but he has roots as a Christian Orthodox in Russia. And he succeeds at being the kind of incarnation of this kind of Nazi militaristic USA type of personality who ends up catching Oppenheimer in a lie. Now you ask yourself, is this movie trying to cast Oppenheimer as a victim? Well, there are parts of the movie, it's not clear, it's on the fence. Because part of this movie wants us to throw us into the interpretation that Oppenheimer was just legitimately fucking woman and should have been respected as a scientist who was just a lover of Jewish woman. And how dare this Christian general catches him in a lie, which basically invades on his sexual life. And there's a literal part where Christopher Nolan is sitting Oppenheimer in front of a bureaucratic committee. And as they question his sex life, you see he becomes naked. And there's a naked woman having sex with him in front of the bureaucrats. Of course, it's all in his head. It's not happening for real. But that is Christopher Nolan trying to inject this, oh my God, this poor Jewish man was merely, living according to his own sexual freedom. How dare they invade his privacy? And there's even the Jewish wife of Oppenheimer who says it. It's unbelievable that they're getting into this private detail. But the fact is that he betrayed his wife. He betrayed his wife by going to fuck another woman who happened to be a Russian communist, suspected of having links to spies. And the movie is kind of suggesting that it's unfair to character that we got to this conclusion about Oppenheimer through an unjust trial. And it's not even a trial. In fact, it's a bureaucratic proceeding because it's merely a proceeding that seeks to establish whether he should keep security clearance or not. And it turns out that he doesn't get to keep it. And the movie doesn't even make a convincing case that we should victimize it, that he's been the victim of a deeply unfair thing here. Because it's like, you did fuck the woman. And you do have issues with your morality. You did betray a valid wife that you had committed to. Doesn't matter that you had this passion for this this ex-Jew girlfriend that you had in the past. You have betrayed your wife, and you have done so in a way that linked you to potentially leaking secret information about the government. So I'm probably one of the rare audience member here who was rooting for Pash. I was like, oh yeah, Pash, you got him, you know? You caught him in a lie. He did lie about this. Because Pash is not presented as a hero of this movie. But I think he is a necessary ingredient of this movie. And he should have been expanded upon. It should have been a little more excruciating for Oppenheimer to be confronted to his interrogative skills. They kind of do it, but they don't do it far enough. Again, Christopher Nolan doesn't go far enough in what's good about this movie. Armless G sends a super chat. He says, if I remember correctly, Oppenheimer's wife and mistress were ethnic German, but they were communist. His mistress was also a lesbian. His wife had been married 3 times before. Well, yes, but ethnic German, how would they know? Like, to me, this sounds like the signature behavior is mistress of someone who has been converted to a Jewish way of life in many of the things you have highlighted. So is she an ethnic German by genes? I guess we'll never know, because neither did I nor did she have genetic test. But to me, her lifestyle, marrying a Jew, being Jewish, being a lesbian, to me, that has the signature of someone who certainly had adopted the permissivity of the Weimar type of behavior. And so call her Jewish if you want or not. She was in such a Jewish network of communists I will assume that she had some ties to this network until proven otherwise. So yeah, the movie tries to sell this whole, maybe Oppenheimer was mistreated by the bureaucrats because there was this whole anti-communist, which was secretly an anti-Semitic campaign. But I'm not moved by it at all. To the contrary, I'm like, they should have gone harder. They should have gone harder because there's a problem when you have networks of people fueled by hate. And this is one aspect of the movie that could have been so much more focused on. It's there, but it's not developed again. Not enough. These Jewish physicists were absolutely adamant at producing a bomb that would be a weapons of mass destruction that could only possibly be used to kill innocent human lives. And they were working hard and they were passionate about it. Why? Because it was going to kill ethnic Germans. And, oh my God, great, great tragedy. They tried to turn this into a Greek tragedy. Oh my God, my invention that was meant to kill white people ended up killing innocent Japanese people. No! It's like, you want me to cry for this? You want me to consider this whole crew as been the victim of some great injustice? That their genocide has been misdirected by the bureaucracy of the American government? This is the lesson you want me to learn, Christopher Nolan? It's fucking disgusting. You're trying to have me between the Japanese who have been killed by the hundreds of thousands, Germany that has been raped to the ground, and holy shit, it's too bad. We didn't get a chance to blow them up with a nuclear bomb also. You want me, this movie wants me to cry for the Jewish physicist because he deserved to have his bomb sent to the Nazis first, not the Japanese. Well, fuck you, Christopher Nolan. Fuck you. That is it for my review of Oppenheimer. Oh my God. It's a frustrating movie in many ways. It's a frustrating movie. I don't know what to say more than this. I didn't know that my clip reviewing this movie, I didn't know it would get so emotional. I didn't know this would be my finale. But that is what it is. That is the conclusion I've just reached in my head. This movie is trying to tell me that between a country ruined by war, another country blown and burned by nuclear fire, that there's a third victim. That the great victim is the poor physicist whose bomb was misdirected by the president of the U.S. No! You ended up killing Japanese with it. No! It's offensive. All right, guys. Greta Thunberg was condemned in Sweden for disobeying the police. Her first trial for the action of blockade that, you know, you'll remember we had seen a video of her being carried by policemen. It is true that I was there on this day and I received an order and I did not listen to the order. But I insist on denying. According to me, we are in an emergency situation, and for this reason, my action was legitimate. Ah, emergency rules. The leftists love those, don't they?
Mm-hmm.